Hear him, his sighs against my chest as if I'm the best thing he's ever had.
You are delicious,
he murmurs, his tongue tracing the tops of my breasts. And I say to myself, fuck the past. Fuck the future. The only thing that exists is the present, and this is a gift. I will take it. Savoring every second of his soft mouth on my breasts, reveling in the way he kisses my nipples, flicking his tongue against one, sucking gently then hard, all while running his hand along my hip bone. The feelings overwhelm me, and I simply have to give my mind a break. I put it on cruise control, letting my body take charge and make all the decisions. And my body is in love with the sensations I've never experienced before. Sharp, sweet waves of pleasure literally roll through me, and my bones feel alive, humming and buzzing with energy. My skin tingles in the most delirious way. I am breathing hard as he feathers his hands against my ribs, inching his way down. He kisses my belly, then lower, lower, hitting the top of my pubic bone. I arch my hips, wanting, so much wanting. He looks up and I meet his eyes.
I can't wait to make you feel good.
Then his face is between my legs and he starts with a kiss. A soft, fluttery kiss against my wetness. And I fling my hand over my mouth to capture the sound I'm tempted to make. Because, oh my fucking God, this is the softest and most incredible thing I have ever felt. Then another kiss against my center, and I can feel it everywhere, like a blinding wave crashing through me. I squeeze my eyes shut, and I am sure everything good in the world is happening here, right now in my body, as he layers more hot, wet kisses between my legs. The press of his tongue is firm and insistent as he licks me, and I want to die from the pleasure. I want to claw my way through the intensity, this rush, this thrill. This is the true high. This is ecstasy. He works me up and down, and I am floating, falling, drifting along this rapturous path as he swirls his tongue across me, making me even hotter. I had no idea it was possible, but everything he does sends me higher and higher. Soon I gasp in pleasure, and I don't try to stop the sounds I make. I don't scream out, but I start to moan, and I keep my voice low because I don't want anyone to hear me. But I can't help myself. I have never felt anything like this. This never-ending bliss, this sweet devouring as he unravels me. Sparks soar from the center of my belly, to my chest, to my fingertips. I hear him groan hungrily. He wants me to feel good. He wants me to feel amazing. I think he likes doing this to me as much as I like having it done. He is licking me as if I'm the best thing he's ever tasted. And as I thread my hands in his hair and hold on tight, I know this. He's the best thing I have ever felt. My belly tightens, and I feel as if I'm about to shatter into a million diamonds. Ugh, I moan, and he cups my ass and buries his face between my legs, and the quickening intensifies, and then I can feel it for the first time, like a wave slamming into the shore. Pleasure spins wildly through me, and I pull his hair and rock into his face. A long moan escapes my throat as I come for the second time that night. But it doesn't stop there. The orgasm rockets through my body, leaving no inch of me untouched, as if I need to be wrapped in it, to feel it everywhere as I experience desire and pleasure and want for the first time. And the last time, too. Tomorrow, I start love and sex addiction rehab.
She is blissed out beyond any and all recognition, and I am filled with a dumb sort of pride. It's stupid, this pride, but still, it's there. Inside my chest, strutting around like a big man on campus. I did this to her. I gave her two orgasms, the first two anyone has given her. I guess she could lie about me being her first, but why would she lie? She didn't act like she was some pleasure hound. She didn't sidle up on the bed, lower her lashes, and practically purr at me like my other women had. She seemed all fluttery and nervous, like everything was new. Judging from the look on her face, all rosy and happy, and the heavy way she's breathing out, she can still feel the after effects. I curl up next to her, wrap my arms around her, and plant a kiss on her cheek. I loved making you come for the first time. She turns to me, that shy look on her face again. I loved what you did to me too. Minutes later, we doze off. Sometime after that, I can feel the empty space where she was. I yawn and open my eyes to find her tugging on her shirt and pushing her arms into her jacket. You can stay the night, I say, glancing at the clock. It's 4 in the morning. I should go. Tomorrow is a crazy day for me. I nod, acting cool. Yeah, me too. Big day here. If she only knew why. But she won't. She can't. Then she leans over and kisses me, and I can feel the goodbye on her lips. It is a last kiss, meant to linger, meant to carry on long after she leaves. Should we? I say, but let my voice trail off. I can't ask for her number because I can't do this again. If I had her number, I'd call her, see her, try to find her. I'd want more of her, and I can't have any more. She shakes her head. Sometimes I think things happen for a reason. Like I was meant to come to your shop tonight and get this tattoo. And I think if we're meant to run into each other again, fate will make it happen. Her words feel both like a brush off and like the truth, like some kind of hopefulness. Maybe I will see her again someday when I am ready, when I am better, when I can have a girl like her in my life. Yeah, I believe that too. I get out of bed, walk her to the door, and cup her cheeks in my hands, looking deeply into her brown eyes for the last time. This one's for the road, I say. Then I kiss her, and it's a kiss that is full of regret and hope at the same time. Or maybe it's a kiss with no regrets because tonight was everything it should be. One last night, one last chance, one last first kiss before tomorrow. When I start love and sex rehab. Harley and Trey's love story begins in The Thrill of It, widely available on all retailers and read by Aaron Mallon. Stay tuned for an excerpt of Unbreak My Heart, read by Aaron Mallon and Joe Arden. Unbreak My Heart, Chapter 1, Andrew. When someone you love dies, there is a grace period during which you can get away with murder. Not literal murder, but pretty much anything else. Forgot to turn something in? No problem. You have a hall pass. Lawn unruly? Who cares? The neighbor will trim it and with a smile. Haven't returned a call, text, or email in weeks? It's all good. Driving home while blasting music at window-rattling decibel levels and deciding to run into the silver Nissan that's overhanging your driveway by just 1 or 2 inches? That calls for evaluation. No one's in it. The car is just parked on the side of the road. I have nothing against this car or against the car's owner. What I am is tired. Tired of everyone being gone. And tired of everything being mine, and tired of life wringing every emotion from me for the last few years. Besides, when making decisions, my brother always said, at the end of life, when I'm looking back, will I regret not doing this? Fine, he was usually talking about traveling to Italy or going to the beach to surf, but I'm pretty sure I'm not going to regret hitting this car for no reason whatsoever. Wait, I don't have no reason. I have every reason. I bang into it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times, each hit rocking my head back and jump-starting me with paddles that shock my system. Yes, that's better. For a few seconds, I feel a spark inside me, like a match lit in a darkened cave. I try to capture it, to let that flicker ignite into a want or a desire. But then the flame gutters out and I'm back to the way I was before. I shift into reverse, and something makes an annoying scratching sound against the road. I pull into my driveway, get out, then walk around to the front. The fender is dragging on the ground. Looks like the engine might be smoking. Whatever. I don't feel like dealing, because dealing requires too much energy, and energy is what I lack. I grab the mail, head inside, and flop onto the couch. My dog, Sandy, joins me, curling up with her head on my knee. As I rub Sandy's ears, I wonder briefly if they will send me to anger management class or something. But there's no they to send me away. There's no wife, since there's no woman on the scene. Hell, there's not even anyone to order me around at the law firm I've just inherited. Sure, there's my cousin Kate, and while she's not afraid to kick my butt from time to time, she has her own life. Besides, I'm 25 and I need to take care of my own shit, especially since all the other theys are all gone. My brother Ian died 4 weeks ago, my parents passed away 7 years ago, and my older sister, Lainey, lives 13 time zones away, which is too many miles to matter. I put my arms behind my head. What else can I get away with? Is there an expiration date on the pity free pass? I glance at the empty Three Martians pizza box on the coffee table and pull it toward me with my foot to see if there might still be a slice in it. Sandy watches my foot, then the box. Sandy, did you finish the pizza? She says nothing, just tilts her sleek black head to the side. Well, can you call and order another one? She puts one of her white paws on my chest. The phone rings. Maybe Three Martians can read our minds. The guy who owns our favorite pizza place includes dog biscuits when I order. I stretch out my arm to the coffee table, grab the phone, and answer. I'll take one cheese pie for delivery, please, extra mushrooms, and a side of peanut butter dog biscuits. But it's not Omar. It's Mrs. Callahan from next door.
Is everything all right? She asks.
Everything is fine. Fine is the ultimate non-committal adjective. If fine were a dude, he'd be a bachelor forever.
Are you sure? Do you need anything?
I flip through the mail. A hospital bill? Awesome. Those never stop coming. Ooh, another sympathy card. The envelope is light blue, because all sympathy cards must be delivered in the color of the sky. No need to open that. A postcard reminder about the luncheon that follows the dean's reception later this week, a reception Ian had wanted to attend after my law school graduation ceremony that same day. I toss that postcard away. It crash lands on white tiles on the other side of the coffee table, where I can't see it anymore.
Andrew?
I'd forgotten she asked a question. I'm all good. Mrs. Callahan asks more questions about the car accident she just witnessed. Not once does she say it was my fault. Not once does she ask if I rammed my car into another car. She tells me she's watered the flowers in the front yard and asks if I need anything else. Too many things to name. Nah, I tell her and the call ends. I stare at the phone and a twinge of guilt threatens to ruin the numbness. But that, too, dissipates quickly, and I decide this get-out-of-jail-free card is nice for getting away with whatever I want. 30 minutes later, someone bangs on the door. The persistence of the knocking means it's my cousin, Kate. She's 17 years older than I am, one of those bossy, know-it-all cousins. I open the door for her, and her eyes are narrowed, her jaw set hard. I guess my grace period has run out with her. Oops.
I know you hit that car on purpose, she yells.
Who says the cell phone is changing how we communicate? We don't need phones or social media. We have a town crier right here in Santa Monica, and her name is Mrs. Callahan. She must have told Kate. I shrug.
So, why did you hit a car on purpose, Andrew?
She parks her hands on her hips, which is amusing considering Kate's maybe 5 feet tall and I'm over 6 feet. But the muscles in her arms are sick. Thanks to a vigorous workout regime at Animal House, a broken-down, unair-conditioned gym servicing a clientele of mostly Arnold wannabes, guys just out of jail, and badass women you don't want to cross in a dark alley. I drag a hand through my hair.
It was there, okay? I walk to the sliding glass door and open it. Kate follows me, shouting the refrain, "It was there?" Sandy follows too, then noses a purple fight cancer frisbee on the grass. I throw it far into the yard, around the edge of the pool. Sandy is like a rocket. She chases it, catches up to it, leaps, and grabs. This might be the perfect dog.
"So you did hit it on purpose?"
she asks, trying again. "Define on purpose."
"Premeditated,"
she says crisply. "Yes, then, I did."
"Why? Why would you hit it because it was there?"
"Because." In the silence, every reason I have for hitting the car rings loud and clear. I hit it because I can't hit the universe. I can't hit cancer. I can't hit God or fate or karma or whoever dealt me this shitty hand.
"Andrew, you're an intelligent man. You're dealing with a lot right now, more than anyone should have to, but let's not go down this road of reckless behavior. Talk to me. Talk to my husband. Talk to a therapist about how you're feeling. I'm not going to spout off cliches, but talking can be a good thing."
I scoff. "What good is talking going to do?"
"I know it won't bring him back, but it might help you through. Don't take it out on cars."
I snap around. "The car will survive, okay? It's just a car." She stares at me, firmness in her eyes.
"Come down to the gym. Hit a bag. You're always welcome at Animal House. You don't have to work out in the garage."
"I like the garage," I say, and she should know why. I relent. I really shouldn't be a total asshole. Partial is enough for Kate, given all she's done. "Thanks for the invite, Kate. I'll think about it." I turn to the dog my brother found at a rescue online. He showed me her picture one day after treatment and said, "Wouldn't she be a great companion?" I throw the purple disc to her again. Sandy leaps, easily clearing 3 feet on the vertical. "Sweet. Did you see that, Kate? That is one fine dog." Kate holds out her hands.
"What am I supposed to do with you?"
I don't answer. There is no answer. I'm not her responsibility. I'm no one's. Her voice softens.
"Just give me your insurance info. I'll make sure everything is taken care of with the car."
Kate is kind of like a wizard. Give her a shirt with a grease stain from last year and she'll get it out. Give her a pair of broken eyeglasses and she'll come back with a new pair free of charge because she's convinced the store it was owed to her. If I give her my insurance info, I know in a day or two this will all be taken care of. She's the fixer, and she likes it like that. I'm her newest project. Her toughest one ever, I'm sure. Especially since she's hurting too. But she never mentions that it's hard for her as well. That she's lost a cousin she loves. I throw the frisbee again to Sandy, and then again, and then one more time, and at some point, Kate leaves. She may even hug me. She may even tell me she loves me. She may even say she's sorry that life sucks, but I'm lost in the throwing. And then I realize I've been out here for hours. Because suddenly Sandy is exhausted. She jumps in the pool and lies down on the first step in the shallow end. I look up at the sun. When did it get so low in the sky? How did it become 6 in the evening when it was 3 a few minutes ago? How could my brother be taken away from me? I walk straight into the pool, cargo shorts, gray t-shirt, flip-flops and all. Water sloshes around me. I dunk my head, sinking under. Then I come up and tell Sandy all the things I wish were different right now. She knows why I hit the car. She knows why I'm going to call in a favor later. She knows everything. She listens to every last word. After all, she's the perfect dog. When I go inside, I find a new message on my phone from Holland. Her name makes my skin heat up. She's been out of town for a few days interviewing for jobs in Seattle and San Francisco. Jobs I selfishly hope she doesn't get, so she won't have to leave yet again.
Holland. How are you? I'm flying back to LA tomorrow night. Are you ready for the reception later this week? Do you want me to bring you a slice of pie? If you need a haircut, I'm good with scissors. Smiley face.
Just like that, I feel so much more than I felt when I hit the car. A flicker in my chest, a rushing of my blood, like there's something I want. Or really, someone. My thumb hovers over a folder on my phone, then I open it, clicking to a picture from 3 years ago. A shot of Holland, her blonde hair whipping against her face as we walked along the ocean one morning. She looked so gorgeous I had to take it and keep it. I can't throw out a picture like this. Trouble is, I can't seem to stop looking at it either.
This has been The Start of Us, written by Lauren Blakely, narrated by Joe Arden and Aaron Mallon, produced by Tyler Whitlatch, copyright 2018.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.